Now, if you have acral vitiligo and you have the distal fingertips affected, your treatment options are a little different. Your first goal is to stabilize. And if they're rapidly progressive, you have few options. And you can use oral steroids if they're rapidly progressing, but again, you have to be careful about that. And we can go over the dosing later on if you like. You can also use minocycline, which is a much safer agent, which seems to halt progression. And you can add your topicals. In children, we tend to go to phototherapy a little bit faster, especially when it involves the face, because you can have a very nice response with narrowband phototherapy if after 3-4 months you're not getting any improvement with the topicals.
So you don't start your phototherapy for 3 to 4 months, or you start that initially?
No, in most focal cases, we always wait 3 to 4 months. If we come in with a child who's got cavernarization, who's rapidly progressive, we go to phototherapy much faster. But usually it's 3 to 4 months before we even consider it.
And the patients that you put on oral steroids, do you start the phototherapy the same time as the oral steroids, or do you put them on 3 months of oral steroids and then start the phototherapy?
We usually try phototherapy first for at least a month with pictures, and if they continue to progress, then we add the steroids. And when we do the
continue phototherapy.
Yeah, because obviously we'd much rather use phototherapy to stabilize them than oral steroids, but if you have to, you have to.
Has your group abandoned PUFA therapy, or you just prefer using the narrow band for another reason?
Well, there's several groups and reports coming out of India showing that topical PUVA and oral PUVA with narrow band seem to be effective. So 1 day of topical oral PUVA, 1 day of narrow band. We have a control study that's going on in our institution right now, and we're looking at that. We do feel that there's promise, especially with distal vitiligo with topical PUVA and narrow band, but we'll see what the data will show eventually.
So therefore not an abandoned technique with the rapid emergence of narrow band UVB. So it's still a viable technique as long as one can get the sorolin, which is the hard part, not the light.
Yeah, we've been lucky in the Michigan area. We've been able to get compounding pharmacies to help us with it, but it's not an easy process. And oral PUVA is incredibly expensive right now.
Is there any other type of therapy that is useful to use concomitantly with the antioxidative things and the photo enhancement?
Well, for certain patients, segmental vitiligo patients who are stable, surgical options are very effective. And we do the MKTP technique, the melanocyte keratinocyte transplant technique, and we often find that is a very helpful option, and we publish some papers in the JAD, and there's been many groups in India, in Saudi Arabia, in South America who have been doing this technique, and along with some excellent groups in Belgium, Dr. Van Giel's group and Dr. Olsen's group in Sweden, who have shown that you can do these epidermal suspensions and have an excellent result. And Dr. Molikar's group did a very nice paper a few years ago that showed that in segmental patients, you can have an excellent response that lasts for a long time.
There are other techniques surgically that one can use as well. Right? You can use tiny micrografts of a millimeter or millimeter and a half, although that can sometimes produce cobblestoning. And you certainly can use suction blister grafts, which really are only epidermal, so shouldn't leave you with any cobblestoning. Are there any other techniques that one utilizes?
Well, I think suction blister grafting is very helpful, and Dr. Falabella and his groups and different groups throughout the United States have been using it, and for localized areas, an excellent technique. When you have a large area like half the face, then it's a very difficult technique to use. But for localized area, it's easy to learn and it's easy to do. There's also some new technologies using different agents, using heating agents and heating lamps to extract blisters and apply those. Those are still being developed, but also are available. But the primary techniques are blister grafting and then the non-cultured epidermal suspensions.
With the use of these particular surgical techniques, the blister grafts and the micrografts may not give an even, since they're scattered, and one depends on migration of melanocytes from those two areas. One may get uneven pigmentation or uneven repigmentation if they are successful, whereas the keratinocyte melanocyte suspension does seem to produce a much more even result over the area when it occurs. Do you have a problem with that suspension in terms of hyperpigmentation when you use your phototherapy afterwards?
It's very rare to see that. We do see that. The biggest challenge we have is we get a halo, and it just seems that the edge of the transplant doesn't repigment. Everything in the inside of it does fine, but then the exterior portion of it, there's a halo between the normal skin, the repigment skin, and we have to use phototherapy to do that. You have to go very slowly in phototherapy techniques, and if you overtreat and you get a phototoxic response, we've had patients who have regressed and developed a Kevner's phenomena. So phototherapy does enhance the results of surgery, but you can't use the same aggressive dosing that you might use without the transplant.
You were talking about differences between adults and children. Children tend to have more likely segmental vitiligo than adults would have. Is there a difference in response of children and adults in the topical treatments or the oral treatments or the surgical treatments?
So children generally do better with topicals as well as phototherapy, and they respond faster. They tend to maintain the results for longer periods of time. They tend not to have as much acral vitiligo as adults do. So children do better. Unfortunately, it also affected to a greater degree in the quality of life. So we do try to be a little more aggressive about managing them. And then for the mixed or the segmental types, always try topicals and phototherapy first, because some of those patients do respond. And there's an impression that's false that suggests that you don't go to topical or phototherapy options in those populations. But in segmental vitiligo, try those for at least 3 to 6 months before you even think about surgery. And there's also a subgroup of segmental patients who look segmental in the beginning, but then become mixed. And Dr. Ezzedine's group in France has described that population very well, along with Dr. Molikars and Elisa, have shown that you have that population initially, they're segmental, 2 years later, they're developing other patches in different locations. So you have to watch for that before you consider doing surgery. Topicals for at least 3 months, if not phototherapy, and if you had, then that 6 month period of time, you haven't seen significant improvement, then consider surgical options.
In terms of barely used topical therapy, can you tell me about pseudocatalase and what that is and how that's supposed to work and supposed to be applied all over the entire normal skin surface?
So pseudocatalase, for the most part, did not work in the variations of the vehicles that we were using in the United States and Europe. And there were a few initial studies, and they were abandoned because nobody saw significant repigmentation.
But that is a preparation that is supposed to be used over the entire skin surface daily, at least, right?
Right. It went with the antioxidant theory, but we have seen a few patients who have gone to Germany and gone to the Dead Sea to get treatment with pseudocatalase that is produced in that facility, and I've seen a few patients with results. But for the most part, all the compounded variations that we referred patients over to, none of them saw any significant pigmentation after a lot of expense. And again, the initial trials were not very promising. And there's also an Australian study that showed that it was ineffective. So for the most part, we don't really use it, but there are people who are getting some results in Germany and the Dead Sea.
Last but not least, a couple of important things I think for our listeners to understand is that the new interest in vitiligo has been a chronic one, but there has been a new massive upswing in energy in terms of people who are doing research in vitiligo and trying to coordinate their efforts to make it a more promising research area. Can you tell the listeners where they can go for further information as to what is going on with vitiligo on the web?
Several websites are helpful to go to. There's the Vitiligo Support International. There's also the Vitiligo Research Foundation, and there's also work done by the VGICC, the Vitiligo Global Consensus Group. But there's a overriding website called the Vitiligo Working Group that tries to bring all these researchers in. So if you go to Google and you look, type in Vitiligo Working Group, you can find the website, and it lists all the major projects that people are working on, along with links to patient support groups, as well as research tools that basic science researchers and clinical researchers can use. It also will have some teaching modules on how to do a VASI and how to do a VETF, different measures of vitiligo progression. So if you want to do your own studies at your institution and you want to get some support on how to do it, you can go there. And a lot of members are active vitiligo researchers who love to collaborate with young or older researchers who are interested in this field.
So this is a group that basically got started in around 2012, 2013, and is causing this revolution in understanding of vitiligo. But last but not least, all of this hopefully will come to a better ending in terms of the suffering of the patients. What, if anything, has been ongoing concerning the socioeconomic aspects of vitiligo, of trying to convince insurance carriers that vitiligo is not a cosmetic issue, in the United States at least, and trying to reverse their resistance to helping financially with reimbursement for patients getting treatment for vitiligo, and also what has been done in terms of cultural stigmata in certain countries where vitiligo is looked upon like leprosy, as in India, in terms of trying to change the cultural attitudes of the general population.
Well, I think in many ways the United States is very helpful in this process because we're a very diverse country, and we seem to take on social issues at the end of the day pretty well. And Lee Thomas is a patient who heads up our support group, who's been very active. He's a local newscaster and entertainment reporter who has really promoted vitiligo awareness. And across the country, vitiligo support groups like Vitiligo Support International are working with people like Lee and other individuals to bring awareness. Awareness ultimately results in insurers starting to think about coverage. In our home city of Detroit, where, as many of you know, has gone through a very economic distress situation and is slowly recovering, even over there in Detroit, one of our lead insurers covers treatments for vitiligo, mostly because patients push for that. And across the country, as the support groups are becoming more active, they're starting to push back on coverage as well as support for research. And it's wonderful because we have a wonderfully diverse set of fellows in our institution of every skin shade that you can think of, but are passionate about making sure that vitiligo treatment is a covered benefit for their patients. And we also have a wide rainbow of colors within our support group. So we also are quite aware that it's not just darker skin patients who are affected by vitiligo, it's also lighter skin patients. But we also have a compendium of researchers and activists who want to provide better coverage for this. In other countries, in Saudi Arabia, in India, where there's significant social stigmata to vitiligo, their support groups are slowly developing, but it's such a severe condition. We've met with several of them, and nobody wants to admit that they have this condition, because the minute they talk about supporting it, people assume they have the condition, and it becomes harder to marry, it becomes harder to socialize with those families that will support that effort. But slowly taking place. Within the Indian groups, they're trying to get their media outlets to start recognizing this as a condition that's not contagious. And then within Saudi Arabia, they're trying to use their cultural norms to establish people of authority and who are in the entertainment sectors to talk about the condition and bring that back to the community and say it's not contagious and you can live a normal life with vitiligo. But in the U.S., I think the support groups are critical, because part of therapy for vitiligo is to make society accept vitiligo as something that is not contagious and you can progress normally in your life. And in order to do that, you need patient support groups to cover insurance issues, to cover support issues, and then ultimately allow society to accept these people as normal individuals who have a disfigurement that we're hoping to solve one day, but today we got to make sure that they're comfortable.